Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.
From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. Coming up, countdown to Super Tuesday. We'll talk with Senator Hillary Clinton about illegal immigration and what it would mean to have a female commander-in-chief. Also, California may be a blue state, but we have plenty of Republicans. What are they thinking about their choices for president?
Can someone explain to me with a straight face how Romney best represents change? His political platform is virtually identical to what Bush has been doing for the last 7 years.
Also, there's been a huge rush of immigrants becoming citizens in the past year. We'll talk with some of them about their first vote as U.S. citizens.
I've lived in this country for a long time. I pay taxes here, and I want to have a say on what the future of the country holds.
I'm Scott Schaefer, and this is the California Report. California voters haven't gotten this much attention in 40 years. That's the last time our presidential primary really mattered. The race between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton is electrifying Democrats, and many of them are torn between the two. I spoke with Senator Clinton today about her campaign and why she would be the strongest nominee.
Hi, this is Hillary Clinton.
Senator Clinton, Scott Schaefer here at KQED. Thanks so much for talking with us.
I'm happy to, Scott.
Let me begin. I know we just have a few minutes, so let's get going. Change seems to be the mantra in this election, and you say that having a woman as president would be a big change. I think a lot of people would agree with that. But other than gender, how do you think women fundamentally approach issues differently than men do?
Well, it's always dangerous to generalize because obviously every individual is different. But, you know, we all bring our experiences into whatever situation we find ourselves in. And, you know, as a daughter and a mom and a wife and a sister, I have different experiences that have been formed my life and will certainly, you know, be part of what I offered to the country in this race for the presidency. You know, I would be obviously very interested in continuing the work I've done for 35 years that emphasizes the well-being of our children. I started with the Children's Defense Fund right out of law school, and I have continued my concern and emphasis on the, you know, issues that really do directly impact the quality of life for our kids, like health care and education. But obviously, I'm not asking anyone to support me because I'm a woman, but to instead look at my qualifications and my experiences and my ability to do the job on day one. But I think, you know, having a woman will provide some different perspectives.
Let me ask you about immigration. In the debate last night in Los Angeles, you made it clear that you oppose giving driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants. And now I know you also believe that illegal immigrants should be able to go to public schools. They should be able to get health care at public clinics or emergency rooms if they're sick. So I'm just wondering, what's so special about driver's licenses? I mean, especially since they don't really cost taxpayers anything.
Well, you know, I think that the difference really is that we have a long tradition of providing safety net health care, which I certainly believe strongly in and need to continue, that we know children don't make decisions about where they live and what their circumstances are. But the privilege that a driver's license entails really should be part of comprehensive immigration reform. You know, to focus on it separately from the difficult cluster of issues that we face politically to come to grips with tougher border security and sanctioning employers and trying to provide a path with conditions to legalization, I think is putting the cart before the horse.
Let me just ask you a political question. Republicans have been very divided over the past year. Rush Limbaugh has been ranting about McCain and Huckabee for months now. Most think that nothing would unite the party, that party, more than you being the nominee. So I'm just wondering, how do you convince Democrats who are desperate for a win in November otherwise?
Well, you convince them by, number one, looking at my wins. You know, I started in 2000 in New York, and a lot of the same things were said, that I could never win, that I could never really command the majority of support from Democrats and independents at the time. And I did, and then went to work across party lines to find common ground wherever possible, and won resoundingly again with 67% of the vote. I think it's also really important to recognize that whomever our nominee is, the Republicans are going to spare nothing. They do not want to lose the White House. This is very important to them. And we know what kinds of campaigns they run and how successful, unfortunately, they have been. And as a result, I think Democrats will look hard at who is, you know, tested, better able to withstand what the Republicans will send our way. And I've been doing that for 16 years, much to the dismay of the Republicans. And finally, I think that, you know, elections really come down to people determining who they believe would be the best president, how they, you know, feel about the plans, the ideas that a person presents. And I think I've proven during this campaign, we've had six contests from, you know, New Hampshire to what we just had in Florida, and I've won four of those. And, you know, we've brought a lot of new people into the process. We've had record-breaking turnout. So I think we'll be recruiting a lot of new people who've never been involved before.
Final question. I know we're short on time. Senator, if you go up against John McCain, which looks likely, he's a decorated military man, how would you make the case that you're more prepared to be commander-in-chief than he is?
Well, I believe that we're looking for a president who understands and respects the military, but also believes that military force should only be used as a last resort, not a first resort. And through my service on the Senate Armed Services Committee and through really years of working on behalf of the conditions that our military and their families face, I have a strong relationship. I have a very broad base of support among veterans. And I think it's because, you know, I have demonstrated that I can, you know, make the tough decisions to protect and defend our country, but do so in a way that is in keeping with our position in the world, our moral leadership, as well as our strategic interests. So I think I will be able to stand on that stage with Senator McCain. We both have respect for one another, but at the end of the day, I don't think Americans want someone who recently has said he can see having our troops in Iraq for 100 years.
Senator Clinton, thanks so much for talking to us.
Great to talk to you. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
We invited Barack Obama to talk with us also, but his campaign was unable to make that happen. Political pundits are having a field day as Super Tuesday approaches. They often talk about California as a blue state, one that's sure to end up in the Democrats' column come November. Truth is, California is a blue and red state with plenty of Republicans. Our bureau chiefs in Fresno and Los Angeles, Sasha Coca and Rob Schmitz, teamed up to get a read on how Republican voters view their choices Tuesday.
About 20 women, some of them decked out in scarves and necklaces displaying the GOP elephant, are crammed around a long table in the back room of a Caro's restaurant in Fresno.
Are we ready right here?
Oh, yes. That
cheeseburger, Mahi cheeseburger.
Mahi cheeseburger.
And a raspberry cheese.
This is the Clovis Fresno Evening Republican Women's Group. Its members meet here for dinner each month to talk politics, organize voter registration drives, and support local campaigns. These women say the primary is the time when their votes count. It's no secret that come November, California will likely go to the Democrats. Sharon Jackson is a bookkeeper in her late 50s. She says it's difficult to push for red values in the middle of a blue state.
Especially being in the Valley where we're more conservative, but yet the San Francisco and the LA area are more liberals. Kind of hard sometimes because you feel like your vote's not being counted. Or just you're crying out but nobody's hearing.
Jackson, like many Christian voters in this group, was backing Fred Thompson before he dropped out of the race. Now she's leaning toward Mitt Romney. She likes his conservative approach to spending. But others in this group, like Tammy Mars, think John McCain can capture the votes of both moderate and conservative Republicans in California.
When I think about a candidate that would be able to take on either a seated Senator Obama or a seated Senator Clinton, we're talking about a seated Senator John McCain.
Most of the women in this group have picked a favorite candidate. But many other Republicans in the Central Valley are still undecided, like Russell Eifert, the president of the Fresno County Farm Bureau. He represents growers in the most productive agricultural county in the nation.
Come on.
He's checking on his almond orchard with his black lab Chomper. Eifert's been holding off on sending in his absentee ballot as long as he can. He thinks Romney will back small business owners, including farmers, but he also knows McCain stood with growers to support a guest worker program.
You can't pick a fresh peach with a machine. You need labor to do it. Whether it's health insurance, whether it's minimum wage, whether it's immigration and not having people to harvest our crops, it really takes a unique individual to take that conservative value of less government is actually better than more government is.
Smaller government, support for agriculture, and faith. The core values of Central Valley Republicans are a lot like those of Midwestern GOP voters, says Fresno State political science professor David Schechter. But this time around, regional differences between California voters may not matter as much for Republicans.
So what the voters will be paying attention to on election night is who won the state. Where did the state of California go, or who won the region? But it's really useless information.
What matters is who wins the delegates in each congressional district. And that's a new twist for the Republicans in this year's competitive presidential primary. That formula for winning delegates puts every district on equal footing, including the rural Central Valley.
This time, we're all equal. All 53 of the congressional districts are equal. The voters in all 53 districts are equal, and their vote will count just as much as anyone in the Bay Area, just as much as anyone in the L.A. area, for the first time in a long time.
But that doesn't mean Republican candidates are spending more time campaigning here in the Central Valley. In fact, as my colleague Rob Schmitz explains, they've been spending a lot of time in the Southland.
The only rules tonight is that there are no rules. We've simply asked the candidates to be...
I'm Rob Schmitz in Los Angeles. The day following the Florida primary, all the remaining Republican candidates flew straight to Southern California, where they participated in their final televised debate.
That's not what I said. We don't want them to lay in the weeds until we leave. That is the actual quote, and I'm sure fact checkers...
Wednesday night at the Ronald Reagan Library saw Romney and McCain exchanging verbal punches over a number of issues. The heated debate underscored how close the Republican race is. In his Orange County office, Scott Graves scrutinizes comments on his website, Red County, a popular blog devoted to Republican issues. He scans reactions to a poll last week that put Romney ahead among Orange County voters.
You've got a guy who questions the validity of the poll. Can someone explain to me with a straight face how Romney best represents change? His political platform is virtually identical to what Bush has been doing for the last 7 years.
Other comments reflect similar criticism of McCain and Huckabee. When it comes to making a decision about who Republicans in Orange County want to be the next president, one thing's for sure, says Graves.
I don't think Republicans have decided. Certainly they haven't decided collectively.
Fellow Republican blogger John Fleshman agrees. Fleshman runs the popular blog Flash Report and serves as regional vice chair of the state Republican Party. Last week, he spoke to a group of 150 party central committee members.
And two-thirds of the people said they still hadn't decided who they were going to vote for. And these are Republican activists, normally the first ones to decide.
But the issues that matter to Orange County Republicans, a strong immigration policy, no new taxes, and a powerful national defense, are difficult to find in one particular candidate. And even if they were, says Fleshman, candidates' positions don't seem to be a driving factor in this primary.
Yeah, I've talked to several Republican activists whose main issue is illegal immigration, where, of course, John McCain is not popular because of his support for amnesty. And still, they've endorsed John McCain. And when you ask them why, they make it very clear. Their belief is that McCain is the only one who can beat Hillary.
One group in Orange County that has seemed to come to a decision is the Vietnamese community in Little Saigon, which usually votes as a bloc. According to local politicians, Vietnamese Republicans are supporting John McCain for his service in Vietnam. Though it seems most Republicans in Orange County are waiting until the 11th hour to decide who to vote for in this primary, Rafe Sonnenschein, a political scientist at Cal State Fullerton, says this year's early primary and the importance it carries got people interested.
Whatever the reasons that were quite complicated for moving it to February 5th, it has turned out to be a godsend in terms of the civic education and participation and excitement out here. It really has been tremendous.
It's possible, notes Sonnenschein, that neither the Republican nor the Democratic races will be decided on Super Tuesday. Sonnenschein can't help but wonder whether instead of moving the primary up, California should have moved its primary back to, say, early summer, which in this year of tight races would have given the state even more importance in picking the next president. Maybe next time. For the California Report, I'm Rob Schmitz in Los Angeles.
9 or 10 million Californians are expected to vote by the time the polls close Tuesday night. Many will be casting their first ballots ever, including tens of thousands of immigrants who've recently become U.S. citizens. Now that they have the right to vote, what are they going to do with it?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services naturalization ceremony. It is my
more than 1,400 immigrants and their families packed into San Francisco's Masonic Auditorium recently. A U.S. immigration official asks each of them to stand as she reads the names of their native countries.
Starting at the front of the alphabet, Afghanistan, Australia, Austria.
There's a patriotic film, the national anthem, and then the oath of citizenship.
So help me God. Please join me in congratulating our newest citizens.
As these newly minted citizens leave the auditorium, the very first thing they hear in the lobby is the sound of politics.
Register to vote today for presidential primary election.
Dozens crowd around a table from the county election office, snatching up voter registration forms. One of them is Maricela Cornet. She's taking a political science class to help her decide who she'll support for president.
I think the country needs a president that just definitely focus and protect the country against terrorism attacks and our enemies.
27-year-old Juan Lezama came to the U.S. with his family as a boy. He says his main reason for becoming a citizen was so he could vote.
I've lived in this country for a long time. I pay taxes here, and I want to have a say on what the future of the country holds.
At his home in San Francisco, Lezama talks about his native Peru, where a civil war forced his family to flee in the 1990s. He points to a California voter guide on the coffee table and says he's taking his first vote on Tuesday very seriously. Lezama attended public schools in California, and he worries that today too many schools are failing Latino students.
As a Latino myself, it is important that the next president is able to change that and is able to have more Latino kids graduate from high school and college and bring resources and teachers to the inner city neighborhoods. I mean, that's very important.
Lezama is a registered Democrat. He's critical of Republicans who tie family values only to social issues like abortion or gay rights. And he resents the tone of the GOP's immigration debate.
If you travel to certain parts of the country or you talk to people from other parts of the country, they, even if you're a U.S. citizen and you speak very good English, if your skin color is dark, they think that you yourself were illegal or came illegal to this country or your family did. The anti-immigrant rhetoric definitely affects you.
Lezama works for a company marketing to Hispanic consumers. He says politicians who ignore Spanish language media may not reach Hispanic voters at all.
Because there's this segment of a population that is growing that are getting their news from other sources, from Univision, Telemundo, from La Opinión newspaper. And if they are not addressing those audiences, they are going to lose big time.
Like many voters in the Democratic Party, Lezama says he's torn between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
He represents my points of view better. But at the same time, I believe that she would be a better president, although I don't think she's as likable.
In an email message this week, Lezama said despite those concerns about Clinton's personality, he's decided to vote for her Tuesday. Down in Silicon Valley, Saeed Youssef is also casting his first vote as a U.S. citizen. He declined to join either the Republican or Democratic Party and describes himself as a mainstream California voter.
For example, you know, fiscally very, very conservative. On social issues, I would let people to make their own decision, all the power to people, so they can have the individual rights.
Youssef came to the U.S. from Pakistan nearly 20 years ago to earn a graduate degree in engineering. His office walls are filled with diplomas and mementos from his community service. He's keenly aware of U.S. politics, and he's not a big fan of the way we elect our presidents.
I think, for example, what I read, it's time for us to shy away from the electoral college system. I think we need to create a true democracy.
One of his top concerns right now is the Iraq War. He feels it was badly executed at first, but he thinks a lot is at stake there, that the U.S. can't afford to lose the war. Youssef also has strong feelings about immigration, supporting the notion of the great American melting pot, but he fears we may have too much of a good thing.
Being an immigrant and to talk like this may sound funny, but I think at some point we need to control the flow of people coming to the country. And more importantly, people who are here, they need to recognize they have to learn to speak English.
Saeed Youssef won't say who he's supporting, but he thinks the media are focusing too much on the race and gender of the candidates.
And then we get marred and get entangled with the argument, shall we pick a first black or shall we pick a first woman? I mean, what a kind of, you know, subpar or, you know, substandard way to see things.
Up the road in Mountain View, Carlos Carapito sits in his company cafeteria where he's recently started working. His family left Brazil 12 years ago for California, where his parents started a cork business in the Napa Valley wine industry. Carapito is a registered Democrat, and unlike Saeed Youssef, he's captivated by the historic nature of this election.
On the Democratic side, no matter who wins, it's going to be a first, right? Either a first black president or the first female president. But I think a good, you know, I think we need some change into what's going on, and something like this could be what we need.
Between the two remaining Democrats, he sees advantages to both.
I like that I can relate to a lot of things that Obama does, but you know, having Hillary and Bill Clinton, some, you know, back in office, I think that there's a lot of good possibility there as well.
This week, Carapito told me he's now leaning toward Barack Obama, but he acknowledges he could still change his mind between now and Election Day. Carlos Carapito, Saeed Youssef, and Juan Lezama speak only for themselves, of course, but they represent a huge surge of immigrants who've become U.S. citizens this past year. The Public Policy Institute of California estimates that 13% of likely voters in Tuesday's election were born outside the U.S. And in an election this close, those votes will really count. 18% of registered voters in California are Latino, and the presidential candidates are scrambling to win their votes.
Soy Barack Obama, y yo apruebo este mensaje.
Nosotros sabemos que se siente ser usados.
El récord de Mitt Romney habla por sí solo. Exitoso como empresario, salvó las Olimpiadas y como gobernador de Massachusetts bajó los impuestos.
Hillary es nuestra amiga y nos ayudará. Votemos por Hillary el 5 de febrero y tendremos una vida mejor.
Estamos contigo. I'm Hillary Clinton
and I approve it. For a look at how Latino voters are assessing the presidential candidates, we turn to Luis DeCipio. He's a professor of political science and Chicano and Latino studies at UC Irvine. Professor DeCipio, what's your sense of how well these candidates are reaching and persuading Latino voters?
Well, most have started in the last couple of days, and that creates a barrier for all of them, I think. The Latino community has been paying attention to this election for a few weeks now, and some of the sort of Johnny-come-latelys to the campaign may not do so well among Latino voters.
Does that work to the disadvantage of Barack Obama? He's less well-known than Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side.
I think it does, and certainly on the Republican side it would work to the disadvantage of Governor Romney. Senator Clinton has been skillful, I think, in reaching out to California Latinos really over the last 6 months or so.
How so? What has she done?
Well, early on she got some elite endorsements, and you know, those don't play a huge role, but they put her name, I think, more centrally in the sort of consciousness of Latino voters. Secondly, I think some of her campaigning in Nevada had a real spillover effect into California. You know, those early visits that she made to Chicano communities in Las Vegas were covered extensively on Spanish language television, and I think got her some attention here in California.
Most Latinos in California, of course, are Democrats or declined to state, but there are about 500,000 Republicans registered to vote who are Latino. What is your sense of how enthused they are about their choices?
My sense is they're driven much more by issues, perhaps, than some of the Democrats. Well, in there, I think Senator McCain has a real advantage. He's done well in the past among Arizona Latino voters, and he's spoken about immigration, which is an issue that's important on both sides of the political aisle.
Those of us in the non-Hispanic media tend to look at immigration as the big issue among Latinos. But I would guess that there are many other issues that Latino voters care about. What are some of those?
In fact, immigration is not the top issue for Latino voters. The top issue consistently is education. The Latino population is younger than the population as a whole. It has slightly more children in the household. As a result, you know, access to K-12 education, access to higher education, you know, that always tops the agenda. I think in tough economic times, the economy is also very important. And, you know, there I think Senator Clinton may have gotten another advantage in that she spoke about the mortgage crisis and people losing homes. And that, I think, spoke directly to some concerns in Latino communities.
Most Latinos in California do live in big cities, Southern California in particular, but there are middle-income and upper-middle-income Latinos who've moved to the suburbs. To what extent do they think about these candidates and the issues that are being discussed in a different way than, say, working-class, lower-income Latinos?
So far, there isn't a lot of evidence of sort of class differentiation in Latino communities and voting. There is some variation based on area of residence within California, a little bit more likely to be Republican or declined to state in San Bernardino and Riverside counties. And the explanation for that is that there have been some local Latino Republican office holders who have done a good job of recruiting new participants in American politics into the Republican Party out there.
To what extent do you think there's a generational divide? In other words, younger Latinos versus older Latinos, do they see the candidates in a different way?
And certainly in the white community and the African-American community, we're seeing some of that division this year with younger Democrats more likely to support Senator Obama and older Democrats more likely to support Senator Clinton. I think the Latino community is a little bit different in that a very high share of voters, regardless of age, are new voters. Either they're second-generation young adults who are just coming into American politics, you know, because their parents weren't very involved, or they're naturalized citizens who are new to politics. So you don't see so much of that generational divide. Instead, you see a community that's really learning about the candidates and learning about politics anew, and age isn't what's driving it.
That's Luis DeCipio, professor of political science and Chicano and Latino studies at UC Irvine. Professor DeCipio, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Over the last few months, California voters have been bombarded with radio and TV ads for and against Propositions 94, 5, 6, and 7. The four ballot measures would allow four Southern California Indian tribes to add thousands of Las Vegas-style slot machines to their casinos. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas reports from Temecula.
Visitors to the Pechanga Casino in Temecula, about 90 miles east of Los Angeles, are greeted by an army of loud, blinking slot machines. Just under 2,000 of them crowd the casino's main floor. Most are electronic bingo machines, known as Class 2 slots. They offer small payouts compared to Class 3 slots. Those are blackjack and poker machines that occasionally earn players big jackpots and always earn the house big money.
Way to go! You get to play again!
If Proposition 94 is approved, the number of Class 3 slot machines here at Pechanga would triple to more than 7,000. Altogether, the proposed agreements, or compacts, allow Pechanga and three other Southern California tribes to add about 17,000 Class 3 slot machines. In exchange, the state would pocket up to 25% of the coins dropped into those machines over the next 20 years. Tribal spokesman Jacob Mejia.
Most importantly, this gives the tribes the opportunity to grow and respond to market conditions in the future. And in addition, the tribes are going to share a heck of a lot of revenues with the state of California, totaling you know, anywhere from $200 to $500 million a year.
With California facing a $14 billion budget deficit, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger focuses on the potential profits in TV ads bankrolled by the tribes.
The agreements triple the revenues the tribes are required to pay California. So this will bring us billions of dollars over the next two decades. It is revenue we must have in this time of fiscal crisis.
The money that California could earn amounts to less than 1% of the state's overall annual budget. And that's if you accept the governor's calculation, instead of the more modest numbers from the state's nonpartisan legislative analyst. But there's no profit big enough for Cheryl Schmidt. She's with the group No on the Unfair Big Four Gaming Deals.
These compacts are detrimental to the taxpayers, the casino workers, the environment, and clearly the next-door neighbors and other Indian tribes.
The group represents two Indian tribes, a labor union, and two California racetracks. These are the folks who put Props 93 through 97 on the ballot after state lawmakers signed off on the agreements last summer. Schmidt says the deals don't force the four tribes to pay enough into a general fund for poorer tribes that can't build casinos. Labor organizers oppose the deals because they bar union elections. John Gomez Jr. is a former member of the Pechanga tribe and an opponent of the pending deals.
Now, we requested to participate in hearings on those compacts to bring to light the issues of worker plights, rights violations in Indian country since expansion. Hey, they were approved without any of that. What Californians should be concerned about is how they were approved, why that may have happened, and realize that, hey, you know what, we deserve a better deal.
Racetrack owners argue the deals would expand what they consider the tribe's unfair market monopoly on slot machines. The odds at the polls are hard to call. A recent field poll found likely California voters narrowly in favor of the proposed compacts by 42% to 37%.
They certainly have got defects.
Nelson Rose is a professor at Whittier Law School and the author of several books on gaming and the law.
There could be more controls. They could maybe even give the state more money. And the question is, do you want the state to have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars more at the price of allowing some of the largest casinos in the world?
Even if the deals on Tuesday's ballot are defeated, experts bet the fight will continue. The four tribes may take their case to the courts or strike up new negotiations with the state, still hungry for cash to bolster its budget. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas in Temecula.
And finally today, we have a correction to make from last week's show. Our conversation with six people from military families incorrectly described one of the participants and her husband. We'll get it right this time. Joan Beach lives in the Sacramento area with her husband, who served in the Army Reserves for 28 years. We regret that error. And that's our show for today. The California Report is a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director is Susie Rocho. Seal Muller is the technical producer, with engineering help from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Our online editor is Gabriel Cohen. Our interns are June Stinson, Ali Tabatabai, and Leanne Lucetta. Victoria Malione is our producer. Ingrid Becker is the senior producer. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation for coverage of immigration issues throughout California. The California Teachers Association, because every child deserves a chance to learn and no child succeeds alone. More information is available at cta.org. And the California Healthcare Foundation and Cal Hospital Compare, a new website rating hospital quality in California at calhospitalcompare.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.